So you've been watching our previous episodes, you're convinced and motivated to quit. What should be your next step? How to develop a strategy? How can you focus your motivation? What's the best way to quit? These are all extremely important questions. Are you ready for some answers? Stay tuned, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for this special series on smoking. Today, Dr. Ferry and I are going to discuss strategies. You'll learn how to quit tobacco once and for all. Before we begin, let's take a look at Brandon's story. He lost too much. You don't have to. Watch carefully.
After losing my big left toe and the plastic tubing was stuck in my left leg, you know, obviously I was able to stop smoking. But over the next few months, I ended up smoking 4 or 5 cigarettes. The plastic tubing plugged up in my left kneecap, resulting in lost circulation to my left foot. In a matter of 3.5 weeks, my left foot went from a normal-looking foot to a foot that had to be amputated. A third of my foot was missing its skin, so you could see the red fleshy meat. Where my big toe used to be, I had a huge ulcer so big as the one I cleaned it out. Besides gagging on myself from the smell, I could see the bones inside of my foot. Both of my index fingers are shorter. The tips turned black, the black tissue fell off. I had bones sticking out of one of my index fingers, and then the other finger, the tip turned black, and then the doctor actually pulled that off. The addiction is so overwhelming that after losing my body parts, I'm still outside smoking. Berger's disease and my addiction to cigarettes has left a lasting impact. My life will always be affected from cigarettes.
Nicotine, it's so addictive, isn't it? Joining us today is Dr. Linda Ferry, Associate Professor in Preventive Medicine at Loma Linda University School of Medicine. So let's go quickly to Loma Linda, California for an interview with Dr. Ferry. Join us. Dr. Ferry, what are the three main components of tobacco addiction?
Well, to simplify it, we could come up with the three key reasons why people use tobacco in their life and why they stay stuck in their addiction. But there are myriad reasons why people use tobacco. So if we just simplified it and just imagine a triangle. Mm-hmm. One side of the triangle is the habit, the rituals and routines of getting up in the morning, smoking your first cigarette, getting that first high after sleeping all night and having your nicotine levels drop. It feels so good. So the feeling and the ritual become cemented into your life. That's just what you do when you wake up. Aside from where and when you smoke, the habits, rituals, and routines, the second thing is what you think about how you feel when you smoke. Those are your attitudes. Mm-hmm. So the other side of the triangle is all the belief system that you have that says, I smoke when I'm angry. I smoke when I need to relax. I smoke when I need to reward myself for doing a good job and mowing the lawn, and I sit down in the back and have a cigarette and get that nice little kick of dopamine in my head that rewards me for my behavior. And then the base of the triangle, where it's the really foundation of why you smoke, is the chemistry. So the medications that we discussed really only control the chemistry. You have to make changes on your habits, rituals, and routines, which is the behavioral side of smoking. And then this hard work is changing the way you think about smoking.
So it sounds like it's pretty important to have a pre-planned strategy before you even embark on quitting. Would that be true?
Yeah, that's true. Many people pick up their cigarettes, throw them in the trash, and 6 hours later regret it and are digging through the trash trying to find that. I know people who've dug through their dumpster in the back of their apartment building to find their cigarettes. I mean, people will do some pretty dramatic things when they just quit impulsively without a plan that they can follow and implement and get through the process in a fairly reasonable approach
without dumpster diving.
Without dumpster diving.
So what behavioral strategies should they begin to put in place even before their quit date?
Okay, so the first thing is, if I feel like having a cigarette right now, I ask myself, why? What's my reason for smoking? And there's a quiz that people can find on the internet. It was created by the National Cancer Institute, and it's called Why I Smoke. Just Google why I smoke. Mm-hmm. And you will find that there's 6 main reasons why people smoke when you take this little 20-question quiz. And you'll find your high score is I smoke because of relaxation. Well, then what you need to do is create a new behavior of how am I going to relax without using my cigarette to do it. Or I need a cigarette to stimulate myself. When I'm bored and lonely, I use a cigarette to perk up. I might find that I really smoke, my highest score is craving, then I need to learn how to use my medications to control my craving. So I would encourage people to really dig into the practice of every time you feel like having a cigarette, say why. Is it a person, place, a thing? Is it a habit? Is it my attitude? Is it my emotions? Am I an emotional smoker? Or is it simply because I'm having craving right now and I feel terrible?
So give us some practical suggestions of, let's say we do it for relaxation.
Okay, so that's one of the tougher ones, to find a new way to relax for the rest of your life without getting a quick 2 or 3 minute hit of serotonin calming chemicals in your brain. So one of the ways to relax without a cigarette is to do some deep breathing exercises. You know, what am I real? This is not a real cigarette. So what am I doing right now?
I'm breathing.
So part of what people get out of smoking a cigarette actually is deep breathing. And they think it's the cigarette calming them down. It's not. It's the process of deep breathing. So learning how to deep breathe without a cigarette is a great strategy. Another is to say, whatever it is that's making me want to smoke right now, that's making me irritated, frustrated, angry, an emotion that makes me feel I need a cigarette, I need to think differently about that. You know, a cigarette is not solving the problem that I'm having with this person.
Right.
It's just giving me a false sense that I'm doing okay and I'm feeling differently. In reality, my heart is still racing. I am still angry inside. It's just I've got this temporary chemical wash, this veneer that I'm okay. But you know what? It wears off in 40 minutes to 90 minutes, and then I'm frustrated and angry again. So what do I need? I need another cigarette. So part of it is learning to think differently, stopping thoughts before it builds up to the point where you want to explode, and learning new coping strategies for dealing with the everyday frustrations of life.
Well, and then there's the nicotine replacement or the medication.
Right. To take care of the chemistry. Another great thing is to remember that habit and handling is a lot of the reason for some people. So what some people do is carry a toothbrush in their pocket, and every time they feel like having a cigarette, or many people smoke after a meal, they get their toothbrush out. Mine says, smoking stinks. And brushing your teeth to get the taste out of your mouth, make your mouth more basic. When your mouth is more basic, a cigarette doesn't taste good. Like drinking milk makes a cigarette not taste good. Acidic things like tea, coffee, soda, fruit juices, those things make a cigarette taste better. Alkaline things change that taste, like milk. So handling might be getting something I could play with, like a toothpick or a paperclip or this little device that you can put between your two smoking fingers, kind of like a handcuffs, right?
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of things made like this. But a toothpick is something that a handler will find quite satisfying to play with. This one happens to have cinnamon on it. You can get them with mint. Tastes pretty good. Gives your mouth a stimulation so that you don't miss the cigarette as much. Another, some other people just need something in their hand and just need to drink water. Water actually stimulates dopamine and creates a sense of pleasure because thirst and hunger call for a cigarette. And most smokers don't know. If they would just eat something healthy and drink some water, gives their hand and their mouth something to do and is actually stimulating their pleasure and reward center.
Wow, that's great. Thank you. Now, Dr. Ferry just mentioned the Why I Smoke test. That's a powerful tool. Go to our webpage, hopetv.org/gohealthy, and you can download the test and do it at home. My recommendation, download it as well. We still have lots to cover with Dr. Ferry about smoking on today's show, and when we come back from a short break, we'll show you how to make multi-grain bread. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
I remember I would sit in the therapist's office and she would say, you have the drug history of a 40-year-old woman. And I'm sitting there, 18 years old, thinking, I don't have a problem because I'm not legal to drink.
And I could not stop. I think I was 36 grand upside down at that time into credit lines when I ran out of money because I was using that much cocaine.
I was not a happy drunk. I was a mean drunk.
I always had to have a needle by my bed, and if I didn't, I'd be terrified.
One is not enough, so then you go to two. Two is not enough because you see you become addicted.
I just wanted to be happy.
How did I get here? This is not the person my mother raised me to be.
Something seriously drastic had to change. And that's when the Lord stepped in.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Well, it's a really Irish day today, and we've got a Riley in the kitchen. Phil, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific.
What have you got for us?
Well, I think it's a travesty that homemade bread has been disappearing from dinner tables for years. And a lot of times when we do have bread, it has almost zero nutritional value.
Right.
So today we're bringing back homemade bread, and we are just packing it with nutritional value.
Yay! Because I think when you stop smoking, it's a very stressful time. And B vitamins and magnesium are really good, important and very good for stress. So I can see that there's a lot of B vitamins in what you've got on this table.
That's exactly it.
What have you got, by the way?
Basically, we're going to start out with a few ingredients. In fact, I'd say a little bit more ingredients, but I don't want that to scare our viewers. We've got half a cup of warm water, 2 tablespoons of active dry yeast, and I want to emphasize that it's active dry yeast,
mm-hmm.
2 3/4 cups of molasses, 1 tablespoon of salt, 2 tablespoons of oil, 2 cups of quick oats, 1 cup of wheat germ. We've got 1/4 cup of flaxseed, 1 cup of bran or barley flour, 1 cup of rye flour, 1/2 cup of wheat gluten flour, 3 cups whole wheat flour, and then finally 1 cup of unbleached flour.
That's the taste.
And we're minimizing it because we want to make sure that we get as many nutrients into this bread as possible. So we packed it with different types of flours that are going to provide different nutrients. And it's actually going to give it a really rich taste as well.
This is such a lovely recipe. Now, I believe this comes from Natural Lifestyle Cooking by Ernestine Finley.
That's exactly right.
And this is her multi-grain bread. Well, let's get into it.
Definitely. Well, we've got our whole wheat flour here.
All right.
And actually, before we even do that, we need to get the yeast working.
Okay.
So let's bring our scientific experiment into this. We're putting the yeast into the water,
mm-hmm.
and then you're just going to mix it around, and that will just basically activate it so that later on it can rise once we've mixed it all.
All right. That's really important. Yeast is a live thing, and just like you and I, like warmth, it does too, right?
That's exactly right. And you just want to mix that and set it aside for a few minutes, and then it'll be ready for the rest of our ingredients. Now, I'm going to mix all the dry ingredients first.
Great.
That'll make it easier to put in. We've got our oats here.
Oh, that's great for blood pressure, good for cholesterol, all that soluble fiber.
Oh, and that's great. And that's the thing, with soluble fiber, you're eating it and you don't feel as hungry because you fill yourself up.
Right. And it's good for diabetes too because it slows that hike in the blood sugar that you get after meals. You know, rye flour can be really heavy. I see you just tipped in some rye flour, but by mixing it together, you get the benefit of the rye, but you've got the lightness of some of these other things. And that wheat germ, whew, that's loaded with vitamin E.
Wheat germ, it's so small, and yet it's kind of a powerhouse. In fact, it's great for this bread, but it's also great for so many other things.
Mm.
You can put it on cereal. I even like to sprinkle it on salads. Just kind of add it to whatever you want, and it's a great way to get these nutrients.
Excellent.
And now notice that I'm holding off on our unbleached flour.
Yep.
So we're going to use that later. You can throw in the flaxseed.
Okay.
And flaxseed is a terrific way to get your omega-3s.
Yeah, omega-3 fats, we really do fall short in our diets. And so with the flaxseed and with chia seeds, but here we're using flaxseed, so that's great.
This... And flax is one of the best ways to get plant-based omega-3s. Mm. Usually
it
you
is.
Think of,
it's a great way.
Usually yeah. you think of the fish.
Yes. But, you know, when we think of the fish omega-3s, we're running the risk of getting some mercury in there. So this way, we don't get it.
Now, we're ready for our molasses.
All right.
And the emphasis is on blackstrap molasses. You get 40% less sugar in it.
Wow. And you get a whole lot of iron. So this is really good for you, ladies, some blackstrap molasses. 40% less calories than sugar. Because typically, it adds a really lovely flavor to bread too, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, it's...
Did you want to scrape that out?
Well, let's do it. Let's get it all.
Yeah.
You know, in your spare time, if you want to do a little bit of Googling, a terrific, interesting piece of history is the Great Molasses Flood of 1919.
Well, there you go. The Great Molasses Flood of 1919 on Phil's recommendation. Tell us about it.
It's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
It basically happened in a factory, and at that time, molasses was one of the country's biggest, sweeteners. And so the temperatures had risen, and one of the tanks that was holding over 2 million gallons of molasses burst.
That's a lot of iron.
And unfortunately, it did damage. It damaged buildings, cars.
Oh, my.
And it just is kind of an amazing thing to just show.
Oh my.
You know, what'll happen? You think of molasses traveling very slow, but when you've got 2 million gallons of it, it can do some damage.
Yeah, that would have a bit of momentum.
At this point, let's pour in our water.
This water? Yep.
This is going to just kind of connect this and turn it more into our dough. And it's a great idea, just like you're doing, to just pour it in slowly, have someone mix it around while you're doing that, just to kind of spread it around so you don't have one big puddle of water and then a challenge mixing it afterwards.
Right. I'll just pour it over this dry corner over here.
And just keep mixing it through. And then let's go ahead. We've got our yeast that's ready.
Now it kind of balled up a little bit, so I've been trying to get it to disperse, but here you go. Let's see if I can.
And with dough, you don't want to be afraid to get dirty.
Get down and dirty with your yeast, yeah.
That's exactly right. Usually it's about this point that I start getting my hands into it.
Uh-huh. Well, then you might want to scrape off that. There you go. There's nothing like kneading bread. It's so relaxing. At least I find it relaxing.
Oh, it is. And, you know, when it comes to cooking, I love when you can get the five senses involved. And one of those, which is just so often overlooked, is touch. And that's one
thing
that when
you get
food...
Yeah, we focus a little
bit
on the taste, don't we?
We do. And we'll even get smell sometimes in there. And, you know, we talk about those. But when you're cooking, it's really fun to get your hands involved. Mm. And we're ready for that flour.
All right.
This is going to be used really to just kind of get the stickiness off.
Mm-hmm.
And help us get it into a ball so that we can then put it aside and let it rise. And it'll be more like this dough that we're all used to.
Mmm. You know, an easy way to make bread these days is the bread maker. And you can get whole wheat bread recipes for your bread maker. So don't feel you have to use this white enriched flour to make bread in a bread maker. You can get some wonderful recipes. And you could even try this recipe in a bread maker. You have to do the order of ingredients slightly differently, but it still works really well.
And that's a very good point because if someone likes to, they don't have a lot of time, they like to just kind of set it and forget it, they can still have healthy bread by putting it there.
Right. So we're going to set it aside for how long, Phil?
We're basically going to set it aside, let it rise for about an hour.
Okay.
In fact, an hour and a half or so.
All right.
And then what we do is we come over to it, and we've had this preset, and this is what it looks like.
Wow.
It's risen, and we actually want it to rise twice. So you just kind of punch it down.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to get it to just kind of flatten a little bit. And then you're going to set it aside again for about another hour.
All
right. And that's going to rise again. But before we do that, we'll have cut it into half, and we'll put it into our baking sheet so that it takes the form of the bread.
So you might just put it like this and let it rise for an hour like that.
That's exactly right.
Perfect.
And then after that we've done that, we're going to bake it at 350 for about half an hour.
Okay, and we end up with this.
A loaf of bread.
Woohoo! Would you like sweet or savory on your bread?
You know what? I will just take a little bit of sweet.
All right. I'm going to take some avocado here.
It's good. And you know it's very nutritious.
You don't need many slices to feel full on that.
That's exactly right. Mm.
That sounds great.
Well, I used to go clubbing a lot with friends. I liked dancing, and basically everyone around me was smoking. I was kind of young, impressionable, so it was kind of image thing and look cool. So I kind of like just pick it up, and I was just 21 then. I started as a social smoker, and soon enough I was chain smoking, and soon after I was addicted. I did try to quit several times. Initially, I was forced to quit after my parents found out that I was smoking, but it was hard when I got outside because I had easy access to cigarettes and all my friends were smokers. Well, smoking kept catching me no matter where I tried to hide. One day, I went running with a friend, and from the first run, I felt great. But after that, I wanted to go again and again, and I wanted to get better. After smoking for 16 years, I went cold turkey and quit for good. I decided to stop hiding. I started running. I guess I ran away from smoking and I run every other day now. I also compete in marathons and I love the challenge of winning the race. I'm not only outrunning myself, but I'm outrunning the addiction. Smoking always tries to catch me, but I'm always one step ahead.
Gisette made a very smart choice. She taught her brain. Tobacco is a bad idea. She replaced it with pleasure, pleasure that comes from sport. If you needed inspiration, I guess her story got you very motivated. Now let's go back to Loma Linda as we continue the interview on how to stop smoking with Dr. Ferry. Dr. Ferry, there are so many methods out there to help people stop. Is there one that's the best, or is it one size fits all, or is everyone different and it's a unique way for everybody?
You know, there's a lot of companies out there that will tell you my way is best, $39.95, guaranteed you'll quit smoking. Hypnosis, acupuncture, buy this filter, get this electronic cigarette. There is not one way for 46 million people to quit smoking, which is simple and fast, or they'd all be doing it. Remember, half of all smokers try every year to quit. So there's no one way. So the best thing for someone to do is to say, why do I smoke? Take that why I smoke quiz. Find a substitute for the real reasons why you need tobacco. And if it's anger, maybe you need to go to an anger management course. Maybe you need to read a book about relaxation. Maybe you need to start an exercise program in your life so that you sleep better. Because insomnia is often one of the reasons why it's so difficult to quit smoking. Your brain chemistry just never gets its full rest every night, and your withdrawal symptoms are quite unmanageable.
So does the chance of success improve if someone goes to a professional for help?
Yes. So the simplest way to explain that is in many, many studies, if smoker going to their dentist, a physical therapist, a pharmacist, or a doctor every year hears consistent two-minute message, you know, your smoking's related to your bronchitis, related to your cough that you have, related to your blood pressure issues, blood not getting to your legs, your circulation, your depression. If they hear that and say, I would be willing to offer you treatment if you'd like to use it, just hearing that message in a 45-minute to 2-minute time frame will make twice as many people make the decision to quit smoking. So even just minimal intervention changes in the hands of a professional that knows you and knows your problems. But if you want to, if you've made a decision to seriously quit, you really need to seek out someone who knows how to use the pharmacotherapy and how to get to the bottom of the real issues that keep you stuck in your addiction, because most people have tried 5 to 7 times before they're successful on their own and come to a professional. You know, that's a lot of wasted energy, in my opinion. Go to a healthcare professional and make this your last time to quit smoking. Right. You can double, triple, quadruple your success of quitting smoking in the with the hands of a medical professional, an addictions professional, because sometimes it's other addictions that are keeping you trapped that you haven't been honest about.
Now, many decisions we make in life are based on a choice between pain and pleasure. Can we use that same modality to underpin a quit program?
Sure. So if your tobacco addiction also is related to your genetic addiction potential that you inherited, and you really are an addict just waiting to happen, the reasons why you smoke, you need to tie that back to everything else in your life, right? So some people need to readjust the way they think, readjust their life, readjust their motivation to be successful in quitting smoking.
So how does someone focus on motivation? How do they really kind of strategize it?
So I would encourage someone to think, what do they believe they're going to gain from quitting smoking? For some people, it's money. Cigarettes are now $5 to $11 a pack, depending on what state you live in, or Canada, I think it's up to $14. And so it might be finances, it might be health, it might be family, it might be relationships, it might be your grandchildren. What's the reason you want to quit? And then ask yourself two questions. I'll show you this scale. How important is it to quit on a scale of 1 to 10? Really, how important is it for me to be quit? What are the benefits I'm going to get? And then you flip yourself the second question and say, how confident am I that I can do this? How many times have I tried? What were the barriers? So if you aren't as confident as you are important, then you need to work with a behavioralist to help you align both of those to be successful.
So globally, you look at how motivated you are, and then you globally look at how confident you are.
How important that is.
And how important that is.
Right.
Thank you. Now you've set your priorities straight, you know exactly why you want to quit, so let's move forward. There's still some work to do. When we get back from the break, get off the couch and be ready for exercise. But first, let's take a look at the latest research on smoking from Johns Hopkins University, Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to today's medical news report. We're at Johns Hopkins with Dr. Anna Navas. Dr. Navas, tell us, a lot of tobacco industry products come with menthol in them. Why do they add menthol?
So menthol has been added in cigarettes for a long time. And the reason is that menthol can actually counteract some of the irritant effects of tobacco products. It's going to make it easier to inhale, and that's going to result in people inhaling more deeply. And also maybe smoking more and longer. And so there is a lot of concern about some of the potential additional risk of menthol cigarettes.
So that's why they give it the smooth. They say it's got the smooth.
Yeah, it's smoother and easier.
Whoa. So now you've done some research looking at menthol and whether it has a particularly bad effect with smoking.
What we looked at is, are there some tobacco contaminants, tobacco toxicants, that are at higher levels or in people who smoke menthol versus people who smoke regular cigarettes? Because of this idea that they could inhale more deeply, they could be getting more of these toxicants. So we look at the number of tobacco biomarkers. So we look at cotinin, that is the metabolite of nicotine, that is the main addictive product in cigarettes. We also looked at cadmium, that it's a heavy metal that is found in tobacco leaves, and that's why it's in the cigarettes. We also looked at lead, that it's also a contaminant found in tobacco. And we look at a specific nitrosamine, that it's a carcinogen in tobacco. And what we found is among all of those biomarkers that we looked at, cadmium levels were actually higher, and you can see this in this figure. Green is the menthol cigarettes, and red is the regular cigarettes. And this shows us that at not matter how many cigarettes per day you smoke, people who smoke menthol have always had higher levels of cadmium. And that implies that really there is more cadmium. The reason, that's not completely clear. Mm-hmm. It could be because either menthol cigarettes have more cadmium, that's one possibility, or it could be that because of this different behavior and how people smoke the menthol cigarettes, the cadmium levels get more absorbed and your internal dose, your internal levels of cadmium get higher. That could be the other explanation. We don't actually know that.
So the next step would be to tease those things out.
Yes, the next step will be to understand the reasons why cadmium is higher, because that might help us to decide which actions to take. And also the next reason is to understand which are the potential health effects of these higher cadmium levels in smokers who smoke menthol cigarettes. That's something that we are really interested in learning. So we are actually doing some research now, looking at the, do they have higher cancer risk? Do they have higher cardiovascular disease risk? Because cadmium has been related to those outcomes. Actually, we have a paper looking at those issues, but I would say the answer is not definitive yet. For smokers, smoking menthol, higher cadmium exposure, but are they actually having higher risk of disease? The answer is not clear.
That's a big question for me after the work that you've done here. Thank you.
Thank you.
46 million smokers woke up today and had to smoke a cigarette, otherwise they would have gone into withdrawal and felt miserable. It's 10 times more addictive than cocaine, heroin, and alcohol. 90% of emphysema and bronchitis would disappear if people just quit smoking. Think carefully about what you value about a non-smoking life and the price that you're paying for smoking.
I'll show you how to break the habit, say no to tobacco forever. Tune in. Welcome back. Now Sean is going to put us through our workout. What you got, Sean?
Well, we got our dumbbells, but let's get warmed up first.
Let's
start with some jumping jacks. Let's do about 8 jumping jacks.
Okay.
All right? But we're going to do seal jacks. All right?
All right.
A little different.
All right? Okay.
Hands here, like we're praying. And the arms come out here.
All righty. Okay.
All right, that's how it goes. All right, so regular jumping jack, we're going to do 8 in 3, 2, and 1. Go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right. Now, why you call them seal jacks?
Yeah.
SEALs and Army SEALs, Navy SEALs, they do it.
Oh, I see.
And they do them just like that. And I always admired the way they do it in you know, unison.
All in unison.
Yes, very, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's wide base.
Okay.
Hands up a little bit, and we're going to do some alternating toe touches, all right? Okay. Right hand going to the left foot.
All righty.
And then opposite, 3, 2, and 1. All the way down, all the way up. Now, why do I want to do this? Because we're going to be doing some deadlifts, and this is one great way to stretch out the hamstrings and get them warmed up.
Okay.
Make sure you're breathing, coming down. Let's do 4 more. 3, 2, and 1. We're going to grab our weights. We're going to do a deadlift to a press, okay? I love compound exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, deadlift is coming here, all right? We're coming here, standing up, and then pressing back down, reverse, and here, okay? We're working our hamstring, biceps, turning it, then our shoulder, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Back down here. So let's get into a rhythm. There you go. Okay, it's a great way to burn a lot of calories with very limited time, okay?
Yeah.
Let's do 2 more. To change up the position of the hand just a little bit. All right, again, stretching out the hamstring, coming up nice and slow, going here, rotating, and working that shoulder.
Uh-huh, slightly okay. different.
Yeah, a little bit different. Okay, so what we're going to do is put the weight down here with a little bit of a gap in between. Okay, we're going to put our heels right into it. This is called a hack squat. You could do your normal squat where your foot is on the floor, all right, but this changes the angle just a little bit, okay?
Right.
That's the thing about exercise. You got to change it up so that you're not doing the same thing over and over again, okay? So we're going to do a regular squat, but we're going to go nice and deep, all right? Stay here and up. Now, this is a whole new angle. If you're used to doing the regular squat, your legs may go, what's going on? And then it may respond with a little bit of a, that burns. Okay? Let's do three more. One. Two. And three. Sweet, right? Not bad.
Nice.
Those burn. Now,
they do.
You can do those with a medicine ball in your hand,
Ooh-hoo.
But those burn, okay?
Yep.
So the other one here is we're going to stack them up just like this.
Ah, yep.
Let's hopefully my weights behave themselves. Okay, you can have a seat. And I love abdominal. There you go. You just did it. All right, so we're going to go. Both sides. All right. A great way to work that abdominal area without necessarily crunching.
Right.
Okay. You can put whatever you want here, a water bottle, but you just got to clear it. All right. Let's do four more in three, two, and one. Go. One, two, three, and four. Great way to work the abdominal area without working your back and, you know, too much.
Yeah.
I'll help you up.
Oh, thanks.
Well, actually, you helped me up. So you work your hamstring, you work a different angle of your legs, and then you work some abdominal exercises. Now, when you're putting together your home workout, that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Work different regions of the body, okay? Especially if you want to burn calories. The hamstrings are big muscles. So if you're doing this, grab some moderate weight, all right? Not just a very light weight. Use some weight that's going to challenge your hamstrings, all right? You're going to come down. Make sure that you can curl them,
mm-hmm.
okay, here and press.
Yeah.
Okay? Yep. That will be the challenge, okay? Finding a weight that will challenge your legs, but at the same time that you can press all the
way. Yeah, that they won't overwhelm exactly. you and hurt your shoulders.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Let's stretch it out.
Okay.
All right. Nice deep breath. Inhale through your nose. Exhale through your mouth. Is your heart rate up a little bit?
A little.
You need to work a little bit harder.
Down
to the middle. Let's go to the right side. And then ease it on over to the left side. Okay. We work those hamstrings. This is a great way to stretch it out back to the middle and push up and come up nice and slow.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
You're
that was
welcome.
Great.
You're very welcome.
Now let's watch another Ageless Advantage spot.
Have you ever wondered if vegetarians get enough protein? If protection from wrist fractures is the measure, then plant proteins seem to be a good choice. Wondering where to find plant-based protein? Nuts are an excellent source, as are beans and legumes. Soy products like tofu and tempeh are protein dense. And the Adventist Health Study found that increasing plant-based protein foods reduced the risk of wrist fracture in women by nearly 70%. Enjoying plant-based protein foods is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Now it's time for your questions. I love to read these questions that you've texted, called, and posted on Facebook for us. There was a Facebook post that says, you mentioned the health benefits of vegetable juicing every day. However, how far apart from the meals should we juice? Well, you know, I believe the body needs to have a break between meals in order to digest the food that we've eaten and re-establish the digestive juices for the next meal. There's some evidence, for example, that colorectal cancer increases with the number of meals per day. So you don't want to snack continuously during the day. So I don't advocate diluting digestive juices at mealtimes with a lot of liquid, but I think if you're eating and doing your juicing each day, you might want to take the juice 10 minutes or so before a meal, and that way it gives your stomach the chance to begin processing the juice and begins to empty before you add the food. Here's another question. Hi, Dr. Narada. I'd like to ask if you know of any lifestyle practices or foods that can ease arthritis pain. You know, arthritis can simply be the result of wear and tear on a joint. That would be osteoarthritis. But there are different arthritises that can be the result of an acidic, pro-inflammatory diet. So consider removing those acidic-making foods like meat, animal products, and add healthy fats like nuts, seeds, olives, and limit your intake of free fats or oils. Drink plenty of fluids to keep your joints well lubricated. Eliminate junk foods and eat plenty of whole grain cereals. One caller asked, I just had a blood test done. My B12 level is really high. Is there a danger to having too high a B12 level? Well, overdose with B12 is rare, especially if you're just taking it by dietary means and you're not having B12 injections. Another caller asked, how do I deal with chronic cases of bulimia and eating disorder? How do we get over it? Well, it's really important to find support. That could be from a support group. You know, there's nothing like everyone who's in that situation helping each other. Find a psychologist who can administer cognitive behavioral therapy. It changes the way we think about things. And sometimes antidepressants can be helpful. Thanks for sending those questions. Keep calling us with your health questions, even right now, 855-400-HEALTHY. And you can also text us or post your questions on our Facebook page. Now, before we continue the interview with Dr. Ferry and Loma Linda on how to stop smoking, take a look at this clip. Bon appetit. Kale is a form of cabbage. It belongs to the brassica family, which includes broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and collard greens. Kale comes as green or purple leaves, does not tend to form a head. It's loaded with antioxidants. Beta-carotene, vitamin K, vitamin C, and then lutein and zeaxanthines. It also, like the other brassicas, contains a chemical called sulforaphane. This is an anti-cancer chemical. Boiling it will reduce the levels. Steaming or stir-frying retains it. And then there's another anti-cancer compound called indole-3-carbinol, which is also found in kale. Dehydrated or baked, kale takes on the consistency of potato chips. It's a much healthier alternative though. Bon appetit. Dr. Ferry, let's say we have a viewer who is now thinking about quitting. Is there anything they have to do before they even set the quit date?
Yeah, I hope you have many viewers who, even if they aren't ready to quit, know someone who might be ready to quit if they shared this segment with them, or just got them some material, or just started talking to them about these principles. So the first thing to encourage a smoker to do is to say, I'm going to change my environment, because the habit side of the triangle is the easiest thing to change first. Yeah. That, when your environment changes, it starts changing the way you think. Mm-hmm. And then you're ready to address the base of the triangle, the chemistry of what's going on with withdrawal. So what you're trying to do is to make cigarette smoking more unpleasant, inconvenient, and unenjoyable. So how would you do that? You wouldn't smoke in your
house.
You wouldn't smoke in your
car.
You wouldn't smoke on your property, and you wouldn't smoke around
people.
So if you just change that in your life, you aren't ready to quit yet, but you just take those three steps. Research has shown that changing your environment makes you cut back by 25% how much you smoke. Mm. And your brain can slowly get used to less and less cigarettes. And then you'll come to a point where your brain won't let you cut back anymore, because that's your withdrawal level. And you'll start feeling miserable if you get less. That's when you're ready now to start working on your attitudes about smoking and get help with a professional counseling or with medications. And the recommendation from the Surgeon General in the United States and in the European Union is that every smoker who's tried to quit and hasn't been able to cut back or to stop successfully on their own should get professional help and use medications to quit.
Second step, does it help to
put off your next cigarette so that you end up smoking less in the day?
Yeah, so there's a couple principles. One is we call the 2 to 5 minute timeout. So I feel like reaching for a cigarette, and instead of lighting it and smoking, I say, no, I've got to pull out my watch, and I'm going to watch for 2 to 5 minutes, and I'm going to do some deep breathing. I'm going to drink some water. I'm going to get on the phone and talk with my friend who's encouraging me to quit. So relating to other people, deep breathing, drinking water, delaying for 2 to 5 minutes makes a big difference because you're learning a new behavior that you can use when you quit. The next thing is, don't carry cigarettes and lighters in your pockets. Don't carry them, have them anywhere within your fingertip reach, so that when you feel that impulse to smoke, there's not a cigarette right there. You've got to think, oh my, where did I put them? In my pocket of my coat, in the closet, in the trunk of my car, in the garage. And you've got to stop what you're doing and get up, and it's no longer automatic.
Okay.
So when you get rid of the automatic nature, take a 2 to 5 minute timeout, do something else that teaches you new behaviors with your hands and mouth, then you start developing the insight that I don't have to smoke when I have a craving. A craving will time out and go away in 2 to 5 minutes, whether I smoke or not.
Wow.
And most smokers don't know that. That revelation that I teach to all of my smokers, they come back and say, Dr. Ferry, I didn't believe you when you told me that. And I just did it because you told me that was my homework assignment for the week. And I'm amazed that when I just distract myself, get on the computer, start doing a chore, wash the dishes, you know, 5-10 minutes go by, I didn't need that cigarette. And now my blood levels are going down, my craving is less. I'm learning I don't have to smoke. I used to think I had to smoke to make that feeling go away. And now I've learned it goes away on its own, whether you smoke or not, in 2 to 5 minutes.
Wow. So you've made it inconvenient. You've made it
unpleasant.
Unpleasant. And it's no longer a social activity. It's something you have to do outside on your own.
That's right.
And you haven't even quit yet.
Right. And I'll tell you the worst thing that you can do to make that may achieve that is to create a 1 foot square and stand in that 1 foot square, smoke your cigarette looking at the ground at your little smoking prison, and that's the only place that lets you smoke. If you go to that extreme where it's unpleasant, inconvenient, and unenjoyable, you're going to be really happy to give that behavior up. But that takes some discipline to narrow your smoking space and enlarge your non-smoking space.
Great. Now, how important is support? Support from friends, family, your health professional.
You know, people who have difficulty quitting smoking, when we look at why they can't quit, it's because no one's encouraging them. They have created a world full of smokers around them, and when they quit, they lose their social network and friends, right?
Yeah.
So, finding someone on 1-800-QUIT-NOW, that's the telephone quit line in the United States. 1-800-QUIT-NOW, make a new friend. They'll talk you into quitting smoking. They're paid to be nice to you, even when you're grumpy. So if you don't have a friend, you can make a friend. Mm. You can start engaging in behaviors that you couldn't do before because you were smoking, like go to the movies. Heavy smokers can't go to movies. They can't sit through a full length cinema. Go to schools and become a reading coach for children having reading disabilities. Go to a library. So many things that you can do as a volunteer and spend your time when you're not smoking doing something that makes you feel really good about it. That's great.
So you're putting pleasure now into not smoking.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow, there's so much valuable information, and we still have lots to cover on today's show with Dr. Ferry. So don't go away, we'll be right back.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. Takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
Welcome back. Remember to call us with your health question on 855-400-HEALTHY. Now, before we go to Loma Linda, California, to learn more about smoking cessation from Dr. Ferry, take a look at Beatrice's story. She'll share with us her powerful reason to quit tobacco.
I decided to quit because my son, Nicholas, wrote me a letter when he was about 11 years old. He wrote me a letter and left it on the kitchen table for me to read. And once I saw that, I felt really badly because I knew it was affecting him, and he knew that smoking was bad for you. So he wrote it when he was 11. It says, "Dear Mom, smoking. Thank you, Mom, for quitting smoking. I know you can do it. It is a hard thing to do, but smoking kills you, so you are saving your life. I'm lucky to have parents like you and Daddy, because maybe other parents would probably say, oh, he's just a kid, but you are the best mom in the world. Don't smoke." And then he drew a little something, which was cute. It's me smoking, and then that's like before and after, and that's a dead me. That's him crying because he was afraid that I was going to die. And I made copies of it, and I keep it everywhere. I keep this one in my wallet, and I keep some at my desk, and I have them at home on my refrigerator, so it's like everywhere. My son is really proud that I quit smoking. Actually, he thinks it's the best thing I've ever done, and he thanked me for it. I think I'm being a good role model now.
Thanks, Beatrice. A mom who left cigarettes behind because of love. Don't you think that's a great motivator? How about you? Now let's go back to California and get the final piece of advice from Dr. Ferry. Dr. Ferry, many smokers are just badgered by their family. And what's the balance really between personal motivation and that family or social pressure to give up?
How do you feel when someone tells you you need to change something in your life that you love doing?
No.
So that's what my smokers tell me. They say, you know, I don't want to do this. My doctor tells me I need to do this. My grandkids are on my case. My daughter won't let my grandchildren come to my home because I smoke in my home. I'm really isolating myself here with my cigarettes. This is kind of crazy, isn't it? But I don't want to quit smoking. I like it. I like to smoke. And my response is, you think I'm surprised about that? Of course you like to smoke. Why would you live with such a disgusting behavior in your life that stinks? You know, you don't even know how bad you smell as a smoker until you quit. Yeah. Most of my smokers are incredibly embarrassed. Once they quit smoking and smell other smokers, I smelled like that?
Yeah.
Oh.
How did I do that to my grandchildren? How did I do that to others? Yes. Yeah.
So when other people pressure you to smoke, remember that they're loving you. That's tough love. Especially when it comes from your grandkid who's learning it in school. You gotta love those kids.
Oh yeah.
And if your wife wants you to quit, that's great. And one of the problems is not everyone gets social pressure. But when you do get social pressure and you're only quitting for them, it doesn't last long.
Right.
So you've got to decide for yourself, what benefit do I get from tobacco, and what benefit would I get from quitting? What is the balance between what I'm giving up? I'm giving up an addiction, stinky mouth, yellow teeth, health risks, paying thousands of dollars a year. I could go on a vacation, a cruise. I could do all sorts of things with this money. I could have a payment for a new car. I could buy a motorcycle. I could start a new hobby. What am I giving up to be able to maintain this addiction in my life and pay the consequence socially of everyone around me wishing I would quit and not doing it?
So you're beginning to switch this so that it's now no longer a pleasure to smoke. It's actually become a pleasure not to smoke, and it's a pain to smoke.
Right. And that's the intellectual and psychological shift that a smoker needs to make. So if I was your doctor and I gave you medicine and you faithfully took it and your cravings went away and that wasn't a reason to smoke and your family was pressuring you to smoke, but you really didn't want to,
mm-hmm.
you'd find the first excuse you could. Oh, this was so stressful. This horrible thing happened to me.
Right.
I had to have a cigarette. Well, that's because you didn't develop the strategies instead of smoking to deal with life's problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to weigh all the reasons why you smoke and how you create that balance of what do I really want? How important is it to me? What do I really want from this? And what am I willing to pay to get there? You know, the price to become smoke-free is actually very small compared to the benefit you get from being smoke-free.
So if you think of it in terms of an investment, it's such a wise investment.
Yes, I had a smoker who, he smoked 3 packs a day. His wife smoked 2 packs a day.
Wow.
And the price of cigarettes was escalating at that time. And between the two of them, they remodeled their bathroom that they'd been wanting to do for years, and they remodeled their entire kitchen with 2 years' worth of cigarette money. And I'm telling you, those people were not going back to smoking because they just went to the next project and on a vacation and felt great about the environment, the smoke-free environment that they were creating in their home.
So is it important for someone to make a list of all the reasons why they want to quit?
Yes, it is.
Because when they get into that craving,
yeah.
they can see it. It becomes, well, if I pick this up, I give away all of that.
Right. And if you start in your mind thinking of this as a device that's actually trying to kill you, this is going to kill me 10, 20, or 30 years sooner than I would naturally die. What's going to happen to my grandkids? What's going to happen to my pension for my wife? What's the real price I'm paying every time I pick this up? I tell my patients, every time you grab a cigarette, think of it as a stick of dynamite. It's going to go off now or later.
Later.
And don't touch it. And that you just need to create the imagery in your mind to say, I need to have my reasons that are personal to me. So I tell my patients, come up with a motto, say something to yourself over and over again, brainwash yourself until you believe the truth instead of believing the lies of the tobacco industry that you need that.
Right. So create a mantra that will remind you why you really don't want this.
Right.
Thanks for being on the show today.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Start to make smoking unpleasant, inconvenient, and unenjoyable. Find out why you smoke, then you'll know what's going to work for you. And remember, God is on your side. He wants you to quit more than you do. He wants to lend you His power so you can be free. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. On tomorrow's show, the things that can trip you up and what to do about them. I'll see you then.